Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with episode number 91, Race Bibs. You may think this an odd topic for a whole podcast episode, but there really is quite a lot to discuss. And the most important, by far, is what to do if you have a bib because you registered for a race, but then you find you cannot run. What do you do? That is topic number one, but there's really actually quite a lot to cover. So let's get started. Besides that, we'll talk about the two most important ways to attach a bib and why one is better than the other, how your bib ensures your safety, timing strips, how the timing strip on the back of your bib could cause you to have the wrong time in the results, what to do with your bibs after a race, what to do if you have a bib but you can't do the race, transfers, deferments, refunds, where to put the bib, and why, and much more. First, let me thank the people who've gone to iTunes and left reviews in the last week since the last episode. I just love reading them, and I'll read one at the end of this podcast. As I record this podcast, it's early February 2016, and I have an idea. While people join my Mojo for Running coaching program all year round, I thought it would be fun to have a coaching class of people all starting at the same time and training for the same race. I'm particularly thinking of people aiming for their first half marathon in the fall. We could plan a group race in October at a relatively centralized location, somewhere in the Midwest. So, wherever you are in the U.S., you'd be only one plane flight away. And, of course, for some people, it wouldn't even require that. And by the way, I welcome suggestions. Please email me your recommendations of what race we might want to do. It should be a well-organized, well-known half marathon. Mail your suggestions to deb@mojoforrunning.com. It should be close to a big city with a large airport, and a relatively flat course would be good as well. Then everyone would embark on training at the same time. I would be at the race to share the excitement of the culmination of your journey. So everyone would need to join my program for the 6 months. Training would start officially at the beginning of April, but people could go ahead and join now to get their feet wet and start using the schedules and start making plans, of course. We would plan a monthly webinar to allow us all to connect better. No, and there will be no extra fee for that. It would be available to everyone in the half marathon training group. If that sounds like fun to you, please comment on the Facebook wall for Mojo for Running or respond to my Instagram posts about this, which will start coming out hopefully tomorrow. I'll be explaining more about this as my plans take shape. We would, of course, meet for dinner the night before the event and have a post-race celebration after the event. Okay, now to talk about bibs. The most important topic is what to do if you have a bib that you can't use. This happens quite a lot, whether due to work, family issues, or injuries. Many people find themselves with a bib, and by that I mean a race registration that they paid big bucks for, but they can't use. The first thing most people think about is that they'll sell it. This may seem like a good way to recoup the money, but most races do not allow people to transfer bibs. In other words, to officially switch the registration to someone else's name. Now, some races do allow it. They usually charge a small fee, but it's far less than losing the whole amount. The way this works is that you find someone who you either give the registration to or sell it to, and then you contact the race director and provide the necessary information and the fee. This is the only way to do it, period. In other words, what I'm saying is that if the race does not allow transfers, I urge you not to give your bib to someone else and not to sell it. I know it's hard to lose that money, but I like to think that we're all honorable and we do what makes the most sense, what's the most logical. And you know me, I'm a rule follower. I believe in following the rules set out in the race instructions on the race website. Now, that said, I know many people will still sell them. This happens a lot, but let me explain why that's a bad idea, because you may not have considered these factors. One is that the race has your name and your emergency information in their computers. During the race, if the person wearing your bib has an emergency, that bib needs to be linked to the right person for that person's safety. If you ever do use anyone else's bib, please be sure to write your name and an emergency contact number on the back of the bib. In fact, I recommend always doing this anyway, just as a backup. 2, when a runner wears another runner's bib, it screws up the results. Listen to what happened to me. After finishing the Space Coast Half Marathon a couple years ago, I checked the race results at the race site and saw that I had finished second in my age group. Cool. I also noticed that first place was about 20 minutes faster. I was impressed. When the awards were announced, the first place person wasn't there. I went up and collected my second place award and went home very happy with my race. The award, the race organization, everything. I love that event. Well, that had been a group event for my club. We had about 60 runners in the race. So the day after the event, sitting at my laptop at home, I was perusing the results, and lo and behold, I noticed I had moved up from number 2 to number 1. What? That was a surprise. I emailed the race director only to find out that that very fast first place finisher was a man running with a woman's bib. The RD was very kind and mailed me the first place award. Most people don't think that far ahead. A man running with a woman's bib is always going to screw up the results, right? Now, I've heard some men say, well, I'm not that fast. The first 3 women would always beat me. I would say that doesn't matter. The fact is that even if there are 100 women in the age group and you finish 95th, which is highly unlikely, still, you push the others down one notch. And you may think that doesn't matter, but I'm here to tell you it does. Everybody looks at the results, and I believe it does matter to everybody. Here's another example. I was doing a much smaller race a few years back when one of our runners gave her bib to someone else because she couldn't do the race. She couldn't be there. Now, she was just trying to be nice. This was a 5K, by the way. Well, the man that ran with her bib beat the first place female. I was completely preoccupied myself with keeping up with the members of our club at the race as they finished when he came over to me and said, "Hey, Deb, I won first place female," and he laughed. I did too for a minute, not thinking at that moment of what that meant. Then he said, "Listen, I have to go. Would you pick up the reward for me?" I said, "Yeah," and then suddenly I realized what in fact had happened. "Wait, wait," I called. "You have to go to the race director right now and tell her it was you. Go tell her right this second." Well, he did, but I was sad, thinking that even if it was only for a few minutes, the first place woman thought she was second, or she may very well have known she was the first place woman, but was perplexed at the post results. If you ever do decide to run with someone else's bib, please, please, at least tear the timing strip off the back of the number. That way, the results won't be affected. And write your name and emergency information on the back of the number. But it would be much better not to run with another runner's number, ever. I know, it's hard to lose that money. But I think that's part of running. You have to realize that once in a while, that's going to happen. Now, what about deferments? And by that, I mean deferring your entry to the following year. Again, many race directors do allow this. Check the race website. Same with refunds, but I think many races don't give refunds. In fact, a lot don't allow transfers and a lot don't allow deferments, but I am seeing it happen more often, and that makes me happy. Most websites will explain their policies on transfers, deferments, and refunds, but you may need to email the race director. Please do this as soon as possible because, as you can imagine, their job gets pretty crazy during the last couple of weeks leading up to an event. Now, what else is there to consider regarding your race bib? How to attach the number? Of course, most people use the safety pins provided, but you may want to consider a number belt or strap. This is an elastic band with clips. You fasten your number to the clips and then put this around your waist. This has a couple of advantages. One is that you don't have to put holes in your expensive running shirts. This is a big plus. Another is that if it's cold and you'll be wearing multiple layers, you can easily put the number belt belt on the outside of your top layer. Since many people wear throwaways, this helps you keep the number clearly visible to race officials, which is the race rule. I usually use this method, but one warning. When you move the race belt, be careful not to expand it too much, not to pull it too much. Yesterday, I was wearing a throwaway long-sleeve shirt because it was really cold when I did a half marathon, and winds were gusting to 30 miles per hour during the race. But I accidentally stretched the belt too much when I lowered it temporarily to remove my outer shirt. When I did this, the clips pulled the number too tight in the little clip, and one side ripped. If you see any photos of me during or after that race, you'll see I had the number tucked under the belt to keep it from flapping around, since it was then only attached in one corner. Anyway, after a while, after you've been racing as long as I have, you probably eventually have everything happen to you. I never had that happen to me before, so from now on I'll know to be careful when I'm moving my belt around when I'm changing my wardrobe in the middle of a race. By the way, I did not throw the shirt on the ground. I threw it in a trash can. Triathletes usually use these belts for obvious reasons. You can get them at most running stores. I actually got mine when it was included in a race packet for a triathlon. At the bottom edge of your race number, you'll often find tabs that can be torn off by the race organizers when you get your food or beer or at package pickup when you pick up your shirt. Be careful not to remove these unless you don't care about collecting any of those things. Always be careful not to fold your race number because it will almost always have a timing strip on the back. If you fold it, it may not work, and that would be terrible. In the old days, in the first days of timing chips, there were all manner of styles of chips, and they had to be affixed to your shoe prior to the race. We don't see that much anymore, but I was surprised when we were doing a race a few weeks ago that did use the old-fashioned D tags. These are orange strips that you have to fold over and fasten to your shoelaces. These must be attached to your shoe in just a right way so they're close to the timing pad when you run across. Well, the tag had been provided to the runners for this race by being attached to the back of our bibs. But it was necessary for each runner to peel off that orange tag, make a loop out of it according to the provided instructions, and attach it to our shoes. Well, when we gathered for our group photo the morning before the race, someone noticed that two of the people in our group had not removed the tag from their bibs, which was not surprising since none of us are in the habit of having to worry about that anymore. 98% of the races use bibs that have the timing strip affixed. That's just one benefit of being with friends before a race, though. I mean, the fact that someone noticed that those two people had not detached the strip and put it on their shoe. One of those two people, by the way, PR'd that day by 12 minutes. Imagine if she had not removed the D tag from her bib and placed it on her shoe. She would have still known she set a 12-minute PR, but her time wouldn't have appeared in the results, and that would have been super disappointing. What else? Always wear your number in the front and make sure it's clearly visible. This serves two purposes. Race officials will see that you are, in fact, a registered participant, and the company doing the race photos will be able to match your photos to your name. If your race number is not clear in the photos, you may never receive the proofs. I like to keep all my bibs because they provide a history of my racing career. I think Sunday's race was my 229th. I didn't save my bibs most of the time for the first 20 years, and now I wish I had. Fortunately, I did write down my races. I always, by the way, write the date, the race distance, my time, and note if I received an age group award on the back of my bib. Sometimes I even make other notes there as well. After that, they go into a box for storage, just a shoebox, or several shoeboxes by now. But I've seen people frame them, especially particularly important ones, like a Boston Marathon bib, or first marathon, or even the bib from your first race. When I was a teacher, I used to post them on the wall behind my desk. I got that idea from another English teacher. That served as an example to our kids that we were well-rounded people who, despite being English teachers, valued physical fitness. You know most teenagers think English teachers do nothing but read, right? I guarantee this had an impact on our students. Now, another thing about the timing strip, and this is extremely critical. At some point, the timing strip has to be applied to the back of the race number. Well, a couple of years ago, I was hanging out with several friends, several of my running friends, at a race, after the race, and two of them were concerned because the time posted in the results was way off, like a whole minute off. And this was a 5K. We checked the numbers on their timing strips and the numbers on the front of their bibs, and they didn't match. In each case, their numbers were one number off from the number that was on the strip on the back of the bib. At some point when the strips were affixed to the bibs, the person doing it had goofed. Who knows how many were incorrect? That meant the time reported under their name was another runner's time, and their time was reported under another runner's name. Of course, we went and showed it to the race director. You'd think that since these things are done with computers, there would be no mistakes. But as with so many things, humans are involved somewhere along the line, and that's usually where the mistakes occur. Although we all know with computers that sometimes it's just the equipment that screws up as well. And related to that, when you're in a race, be careful to always run over the timing mat, not just at the start, but when you see it on the road at various points during the race, so that your presence at that spot will be recorded. And one last bib-related item. Always try to pick up your bib before race day. That way, there's time to get any errors corrected. That's better for you and for the race director. And if you or a friend picks up race packets for a group, everybody should be extra careful to make sure they have the right packet with the right number, the one that's assigned to them. Okay, that's it about bibs. That's my bibs podcast. I'm always interested in your comments. Please go to the Mojo for Running Facebook page and comment under the post for this episode if you have any suggestions or any other things to mention that I didn't cover. Also, I'm trying to post to Instagram every day. If you're not following me, please do. I'm at Mojo for Running. And for any beginners out there, my beginner Instagram account is You Too Can Run. That's Y-O-U, and then the number 2, and then Can Run. If you have a spouse or friend even considering starting to run, or at the very beginning of their running career, please send them to the other podcast for beginner runners that I do, titled Beginner Runner Village. That's for people who've not worked up to a 5K, or even people just giving some thought to getting out there and trying to start running. If you have friends who are thinking about starting to run, that will be very helpful because it really takes the fear out of it and replaces that with motivation. Welcome to these new members of the Mojo for Running coaching group, Leah Barrett, Sarah Early, and Elizabeth Heath. And remember, if you've been considering a half marathon, think about joining my first half marathon training team that will start either in March or April. I'll need 25 people to sign on to make this happen. We'll pick a half marathon in a centralized location, as I mentioned earlier, and I will be there to cheer you on and enjoy spending time with you before and after the event. It will be a blast. I know it. If it works out well, I'll plan on doing that at least once a year. In fact, maybe after those people do that first half, they'll want to sign on to do a full. You never know. Now I want to thank my contributors, only two since last episode, Kim and Simon. Thank you both very much. Now I want to read an iTunes review and then a Facebook comment. Or maybe I don't have the Facebook comment. I don't think I actually found that, so I'll save that for the next episode. But from iTunes, this comment comes from Rach. I think it's probably pronounced Rach. As an intermediate runner, I found this information so helpful. I'm training for my third half marathon and learned some awesome tips through the podcast. Thanks, Debbie, and happy running. Thank you, Rach. And now, here's today's quote. Success isn't how far you go, but the distance you've traveled since you started.